Well, there's a couple. Part of this bill is providing for consecutive sentences for people who resist arrest, assault officers, or flee from law enforcement and endanger our communities. Now, as we've seen all across the last many years, all of this type of conduct has gone up quite dramatically. You talk to anyone in uniform, they'll tell you there's been a dramatic and troubling increase in assaults on them, people resisting their lawful arrests, and then people taking off at high rates of speed and endangering life and limb in our communities. There's been at least two, I think three deaths since the last session from criminals who are fleeing from law enforcement, from the lawful efforts of law enforcement. And there, but for the grace of God, we would have more deaths. There have been other incidents that have been highlighted around the state, too. And it gets referred to by many in law enforcement as an epidemic. Because what happens all too often is that these criminals who are being pursued by law enforcement for an underlying offense then do this additional conduct, and they get sentenced concurrently. And what concurrently means is punching that officer in the face, assaulting them, using the vehicle to flee and endangering our communities and all of the citizens is a freebie. It gets served at the same time. You might get 5 years on your drug case, let's say. Get 5 year sentence on your drug case, and then I'll give you a year for an aggravated assault on the officer. I'll give you a year for that assault. Well, and to be served concurrently, which means at the same time, which means it's a freebie. And so law enforcement has asked me over the last years, and I've just become a strong proponent of this idea that that's not a freebie. It's additional conduct. In addition to the underlying offense, you're going to get sentenced to an additional sentence for that conduct. Another critically important component of this bill, though, is something else I've discovered just since becoming Attorney General. And that is the unfortunate fact, and it is a fact, that we have no truth in our sentencing in North Dakota. And this part of our bill doesn't do anything. It doesn't extend the sentences that judges can give. It doesn't extend the sentences that apply to the laws that have been passed by the legislature in North Dakota. What it does do is say that when you get convicted of a crime and the judge, in her or his wisdom, has taken in the arguments of both sides, has considered your criminal history, has considered whether you seem to be accepting responsibility and so on, and what's the impact on your victims and so on. When they've considered all of those things and they've arrived at a sentence, you'll serve that sentence. And what people in North Dakota have been led to believe is that's what happens. If I get a five-year sentence, you serve 5 years incarcerated. A gate closes behind you. You are in prison for 5 years. But the truth of the matter is, in North Dakota, that is not even close to the case. And what my proposal is, it says you have to serve, if you have to serve 85% of your sentence on a violent crime offense. You have to serve 85% before you would be eligible for, and that would still be an early release. And you have to earn that time when you get there. The people on this call or are listening today on your radio station will be really surprised probably to hear that these policies started changing in North Dakota 10 or 12 years ago to where now bureaucrats who the public didn't pick, they're not accountable, and they don't have to report that it's happening, can release those prisoners whenever they feel like it. And they'll tell you, the DOCR will tell you, oh, no, they're still incarcerated. And what it really means is they're not at the state pen. They're back in your community. They're in a halfway house or something else they call a transition center. They're not behind bars. They're not in a restricted environment. They routinely do. The testimony from DOCR the other day, they admitted it in the hearing. They routinely walk away, they call it. I call it a prison escape. I call it escape from control of DOCR, because there is no control when they go out there. And your listeners will be surprised to hear that the bureaucrats at the prison can let them go whenever they want to reclassify them, whenever they want to say, oh, we have a little space problem.
Whose decision is that? Yeah, who makes that call to say let them out earlier?
It can happen in two ways. The OCR bureaucrats just classify them. Now it's going to move them into a transition, they say. They may have had a five-year sentence, and now they're going to move them out at 1 year. Or even less. There's no restrictions on that. Or a lot of times there's a parole board they can make take that action too. But I'll say there's a big difference there. The parole board is an appointed body. They have scheduled meetings. It is transparent, and they are accountable. Our bill leaves the parole board in place, and it says once a prisoner has served 50%, if the parole board, this accountable body, takes everything into consideration and concludes that they want to recommend parole for that person, they can do so at 50% of a violent crime. For the nonviolent crimes, by the way, we leave everything as it is now. We've got a battle on our hands with the legislature right now on this matter, and we're just talking about violent crimes. So we're gonna take that bite in this session and say, if you get convicted of a violent crime, you will serve 85 at least, and that's if you're an ideal prisoner. 85% of that sentence that the judge, in her or his wisdom, passed for you. And that sounds crazy, but every time I tell this to somebody in the public, they're like, how can it be that they get out? I said, well, they do all the time. And what they'll say at the OCR is, well, they've got programming and they want to incentivize good conduct. And what the statistics tell you, and they have nothing to counter this, that are after 10 to 12 years of this quote unquote experiment, recidivism rate is really high. It's in the 40s. 40% of the people, they tell me at the OCR, 40% of the people in the prison are there because they violated their probation and parole, and they get sent back after long strings of outrageous crimes and additional antisocial and illegal conduct. So you have 40%. But you know what's interesting, Scott? As we've delved into these statistics, they're not even close. Our DOCR puts on their website that, oh, it's 40%, which is way too high. They don't tell you that they don't count the people who go to federal prison, who do something even worse when they get out and they're out on early release. They don't tell you when somebody gets a local hit and they get convicted and they get sent to the county prison for 4 months or 5 months. That doesn't count in their recidivism number. This is what they've told us. That's what they've acknowledged to us as we go. So as we dig behind these numbers, what we learn is we have a porous system that releases people early, by people who are not accountable to go back into our communities. They are free to roam throughout the day. They seldom get drug tested. They seldom get alcohol tested. There are no bars. And when they walk away to endanger our communities, DOCR will acknowledge sometimes they don't even call. They call around to talk to their families and see if they can locate them first. This
All right,
is a
I
system
have,
that isn't working. It isn't protecting the public.
I feel like I'm talking to a whistleblower about things that the taxpayers should know are going on in the North Dakota Department 100%. of Corrections and Rehabilitation. You in your time as Attorney General, have your eyes been open? Obviously, as U.S. Attorney previously, you're quite aware of this department, but now you're a little closer to it as Attorney General. I mean, do we need some sunshine on this organization in North Dakota to get to the bottom of some of this?
Exactly what we need is sunshine, and that's exactly what we're providing. And I'll tell you, the people who are against us on this are not very happy about the sunshine. They can't contest our statistics, and they can't counter our arguments. But boy, they try sometimes. They come up with all sorts of things. A person the other day said something they said to us for the last 2 years, almost acting confused, saying, gosh, you know, we don't even have the authority to shorten sentences. We don't even know what you're talking about. Okay, well, you just call it a different thing. See, the public thinks that when someone gets sentenced to prison for 5 years, they're in prison for 5 years. They might be in prison for, well, here's an example. Josiah Anderson, conspiracy to deliver a controlled substance after a long history of criminal activity, was sentenced to 4 years in the state pen. He got out after time served in jail of 190 days, or 13% of his sentence. Kevin Luke, dealing fentanyl, deadly fentanyl. Two cases, he got a 2-year sentence, time served 7.1% of his sentence before he went back out into the community to endanger the community. Corey Willard, second time possession of meth, 4-year sentence, 71 days, 4.9% of her sentence. The list goes on and on and on. And then
let me make sure I understand this correctly. And so what you're suggesting is not to say that the sentence of 5 years is mandatory. You're saying whatever the judge actually gives right. in the way of a sentence that they actually, you know, again, until the point you mentioned of 85% or whatever the number is, and they prove to be worthy of being let out early. But I know a lot of people grumble, we can't have mandatory minimums that tie the hands of judges. Right. I heard that from Adam Martin, who has an interesting, compelling story that people are familiar with the other day at the Capitol. He's like, I like a lot of this, but oh, those mandatory minimums are a bad idea. I don't hear you talking about mandatory minimums.
No, the only mandatory minimums in there are very tiny, literally. And they're the ones that say you have to give a sentence in addition. If they get sentenced on an underlying offense, it's got to be additional conduct for punching the officer, assaulting the officer, or endangering the community by fleeing from law enforcement. And they're not very lengthy, but they are additional. It's like 2 weeks or a month. And then it's the judge's discretion to do more. That's a red herring. It's a small part of this bill when you look at the overall saying truth in sentencing, because there's no truth in sentencing right now. There's smokescreen in sentencing. This bill stands up. The judges are selected by the people of this state. They are paid by the people of this state, and they are retained in their new elections or not by the people of this state. One of the most sacred responsibilities we give a judge is to pass sentence after a criminal conviction. And I know firsthand, it's surprising to a lot of judges how quickly somebody can be back in their courtroom when they think they sentenced them to 7 years, and now they're standing in front of them again 2 years later, they committed another offense. Judges can't lobby on these things. Judges can't come in and be part of the political process. But I know plenty of judges who themselves wonder why there isn't more regard for the sentences that they are. A significant part of their job is to be in place, and society gives them that responsibility. And then apparently in North Dakota, we've decided we aren't going to, I shouldn't even say decide, because it's been decided for us by the bureaucrats. We're not going to pay attention to what the judges do. We know better. Well, 10 years of history now shows us that they don't. I go back to 2014, crimes against people, so like violent crimes against the person and robbery, 8,811 committed in 2014. Steady year after year after year climb until 2023, the last year for which we have statistics, 12,601. So 4,000 more victims just 10 years later after a steady climb north. And it makes sense. Violent criminals are getting out when the bureaucrats say they can go, no accountability, into situations in halfway houses that don't have control over them. They are recidivating at a rate that the DOCR says is 40%, but is actually significantly higher, because DOCR doesn't bother to tell the public, oh, yeah, also some get prosecuted federally or locally. And we don't. They tell me, and their web page says it, they only count the ones that go back to DOCR, and it's still 40%. So that means they're guessing
what is the – I only have a couple minutes left, but I have two things that I'm curious of the opinions of. One is the Department of Correction Research, you know, this DOCR department. What is their argument for doing how they're doing it, and these people not fulfilling many of their you know, sentences? Is it the prison space, or what's their argument? Why do they defend what they do?
First argument I heard a couple of years ago were, oh, we got these programs in place, and they'll say, Drew, they're going to get out at 97% of them are getting out someday. I said, so you got to let them out at 7%, 10%? That's not an argument. Or they say, well, we've got these programs, and we're really working with these people, and we've got all this stuff for reentry, and we want them to be, you know, we want them to be, you know, good citizens and have jobs. We all want that. But here we are 10, 12 years in, they've got nothing to show. I said again at the hearing the other day, I said, I'm still sitting here with my hands open, waiting for them to give us any statistics that would show and encourage us that they've got their arms around the problem. They don't. And so one of the most important things we can do is protect the public by incapacitating the violent criminal.
No, it makes sense. Says, the other question I had for you is, Jay Thomas and I were chatting with Governor Armstrong shortly after his State of the State address, and Jay specifically asked a question about this, and he seemed to push back rather significantly. Obviously, Kelly's a former criminal defense attorney. What does the governor say about your proposal?
I've spoken to him only once on this thing. I've seen a couple of news articles that make it sound like we're having an argument about it. Nothing could be further from the truth. We didn't have an argument about it at all. Because the biggest thing is that I think a misperception has been that we have the same bill we had last time. We got the message from the legislature. They don't want extensive, protracted mandatory sentences. And this bill is not that. As I said, this is truth in sentencing. This is when the judge sentences within that range that the legislature sets, and the judge says this is the right penalty after hearing all the arguments and looking at the victim impact and the history of criminal history, then that's what they ought to serve. I would ask people to go to our website, check this out. This information is going to be out there in the next day or so. Call your legislator and ask them to support truth in sentencing, Senate Bill 2128.